Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. This week, we have a couple of Patreon supporters I would like to give a shout out to. If you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/cooltools. This week, I want to give recognition to Maureen Grolnick and Michael Knox. Thank you so much for being Patreons of the Cool Tools Show. And like I said, patreon.com/cooltools. Thank you so much. Our guest this week is Bob Potts. Bob holds an MFA in industrial design, and he was the design director for a series of corporate groups responsible for design development of diagnostic medical products, including Corning Medical and Bayer Healthcare. He holds 16 patents and has been a frequent presenter at international industry conferences, design seminars, design programs, and business schools. His design groups have won over 60 international awards for design excellence and have been featured in ID, Print, Communication Arts, Axis, Nikkei Design, Business Week, and Fortune. Hi, Bob. How are you?
Yeah, we're doing great up here.
Excellent. Yep, up in Vermont.
Yeah,
very
we're
nice.
So eager to hear your cool tool picks and your favorite tools for making things. And we're really looking forward to it.
So, Bob, why don't you start by telling us about one of your first tools on the list? It's a kind of a clamp. Describe that clamp for us and why you like it.
Well, there's a new type of clamp that's appeared on the market, and it is basically a bar, metal bar, and then it has typically plastic pieces that slide on the bar. And I think everybody's seen those, and they've had them for years and years made out of wood and iron and so on. But I was looking for tools the other day. I love tools, and I have every kind you can imagine. And all at once, I found these made by Jorgensen Company in Chicago. And the thing that just grabbed me when I saw them is the fact that they were so small. Most of the things that people work on, unless they do woodworking, are not large tools. They're not made for clamping big things together. The ones that I have are only a little over 4 inches jaw opening, and they are perfect for anything like hobbies, doing anything that is small, requires a lot of dexterity because you can operate them with one hand. And they have some great features. The one that I'm really taken with is the idea that by taking one screw out and removing one of the jaws and moving it around to the other end, they go from being a clamping device to being a spreading device.
Oh, cool.
So where these come into play is if someone's making like a canoe, they would use the larger clamps, but you could actually put the clamp inside the canoe, crank it until it goes out to exactly where you want to hold it, and it will do that.
So this is like a piece of metal bar, and on one end is a kind of a plastic end that sticks up a couple inches, and at the other end is another side of the clamp that has a handle on it that you squeeze, and you can ratchet the clamp together by ratcheting this handle as they move in closer and closer. And that ratcheting handle can also have another one that lets you slide it back and forth without having to ratchet it to adjust things in the beginning. And then you...
Right. And I think what they did is these products that have been on the market in the past, people keep improving them. And these are improved to the point where everything, including a quick release for the movable part of it, is very, very easy to use. It's a very, very attractive tool. They're orange and black. They have black removable rubber protective ends on the jaws so you don't harm anything. And the tool can be used for a myriad of purposes. It's just an all-purpose clamp. And I just find that it's a great solution. I think it's sort of the new generation of clamps for, you know, home shop use and hobby use. And so I have the smallest ones they make, the 4 inches. And I like them very much.
So another alternative when you're doing small things is to have some of these clamps that look like huge, oversized jumbo clothespins. And they also can be operated with one hand. It's kind of like, you know, just imagine a huge clothespin. How are these better?
The thing that I like about them, I have those and I've used them for many things. And the thing I like better about these is the fact that with a clamping force maximum 50 pounds on the ones, the Jorgensens, what you can do is you can ease up on the pressure that you want and make it a little bit more or a little bit less, whereas the ones that you squeeze like a clothespin and put on something really holds it with one force based on how thick the material is that you're clamping. So those lose control. They don't, they're kind of a fixed clamp and they're not as controllable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Okay. That's a great reason to have these. And just for people understand, there are larger versions of these, and these are the ones that are common throughout, you know, workshops. And what's special here is the fact that they're very, very tiny.
Right, right. I actually don't know how large they make these, but I've seen them that are probably 4 feet long, and they may make them longer for clamping wood together and making furniture and so on.
Okay. So what's another favorite tool of yours?
The tool that I use the most, and it's because I have a large old house with land around it, is the Ego lithium cordless variable speed blower. And it's basically just a really well-designed cordless blower for use outdoors, although I've used it for everything from blowing out garage floors. I use it on tools in the wood shop. But in terms of just cleaning any place around a house, it's amazing. I've given one to both of my daughters, and they use them all the time. They're powerful tools.
So if you describe them, it looks like the kind of leaf blower that people would understand, which were in the past operated by gasoline engines that are very, very noisy.
Right.
These are kind of a smaller thing that may be the size of a dust buster with a long nozzle, but they're cordless electric, right?
They are. And the batteries that they use are lithium ion batteries. And the company, as a lot of companies have done, have realized that if you have a basic power source, a battery that's the same form factor, same power output, and so on, you can use that to power any of your tools. And so they have a complete line of tools, of which I have several, a string trimmer for the yard, a blower. They now have introduced they're on their even second generation of a lawnmower. And I don't know anyone that owns one, but my daughter Jessie does have a chainsaw that is electric, and they're very quiet. They put out no fumes, and they're just a joy to use. One of the things that I have found is that when I work outside with it, a lot of people walk down our road and look at the ocean, and when they go by, they always say something to the effect of, "That is the quietest tool I've ever heard." And I said, "Here, try it." And I let people try it. And they giggle and they can't believe that it's so powerful. It blows up to 100. The one I have blows up to 180 miles per hour wind.
Whoa.
And the people, it feels like you have a tornado in your hand. But I've used it so long. Ego's a very good company. I actually had a problem with it, and they replaced it with no problem. But
one of the things that's now common these days, because there are so many different cordless systems, is there are adapters that allow you to use one brand of batteries on others. And so, like, if you have DeWalt tools, you can find an adapter that will allow you to use all your DeWalt batteries on a new Milwaukee tool or a Ryobi,
right,
or maybe a Go. And so the question would be, does this have the ability to get an adapter so you could use your existing cordless batteries on one of these?
I've never seen that in their advertising, and I've never seen it at the store. The tools, or the whole Ego line, is carried at Home Depot, and you can go there and look at them. But I've never seen anything about the fact that you could swap batteries between brands. But if I think from having looked at these tools, that what I would typically do is just keep stock. You don't have to buy the battery. So you can buy the tool only for less money, and then you can use the batteries from another product. So basically, you end up having, there's no downtime. You just keep swapping batteries, which do last for a long time and don't take that long to charge.
That's really, really great. So these are called Go. I had not heard of that brand before.
Ego, E-G-O.
Oh, Ego. Oh, I see.
Ego. Yeah, they've got a Zoomy logo and so on, but it's really a quality product.
To me, it looks like some kind of a weapon that you would find in a 1990s Japanese anime that a robot would be wielding.
Right. And I presume you have gone to the maximum CFM, the cubic feet per meter, the 650. Is that what you would recommend?
No, it's funny. I bought one when they first came out, and it has lasted all this time. And the other day I went online and looked at the new ones, and lo and behold, there's like five new models, and they've added a lot of features. But you know what? The one I have does everything I want it to do. It's powerful enough. And
which one do you have?
It's not even in the line anymore.
Oh, I see.
Okay. It would be the bottom of the line.
Oh,
and
okay.
They've come up with equal products in terms of performance, but now they have some that have much more performance. But I'm not sure what exactly you would use them for. I can blow wet leaves. And you know, most of the time I use it, I run it down around the medium setting. And it's perfectly acceptable. And so it does everything I need it to do.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, you probably can't control it with your iPhone, right? All righty. Okay. Well, so that's a really cool one, a cordless blower. You have another one for us, another tool of the classic sense.
That's the Stanley Wonder Bar Pry Bar. This sounds really boring, and everyone has seen this thing before, but a lot of people didn't buy it. And the salesman, when I was down at Home Depot, he said people look at it and they think it looks really silly, and it's just
it's already broken.
Yeah,
it is. It's like it's already broken. Yeah.
Could you describe it, please?
So the if you look at the product from the side, it's a flat piece of bar stock. It is not shaped like a crowbar, which has a thicker, rounder section typically, but it's a flat piece of bar stock that makes it very comfortable to slide onto things. For instance, one of the neatest things about it is if you're hanging drywall, trying to raise cabinets a half inch, or doing a lot of other things during construction in your house, you can use your hand or your foot to stand on one end of the bar and very carefully raise the other end to adjust things so you can fasten them with your hands. And I think it's a great feature. And not until you buy one of these things do you realize what all it will do. It pulls tools in a conventional way. It also pops tools out so that they're not dangerous when they come out. They're slow because of the pivot points on it. And it is designed in such a way that when you use it, there's areas that your fingers will fit into so you don't smash your fingers like a regular crowbar. And overall, the more I use it, the more uses I find for it. And I've replaced six decks. I've done siding. We have cedar shake on the house. I've done all of that. And this thing just keeps on prying. And it's just a great tool.
Right. So a pry bar usually was just a flat piece of metal that would kind of have a wedgy end, and that you would use it to pry things apart, to pry a board apart, to pry siding off. And then they got fancy and they kind of made a little hook on the end, kind of like the shape of a hoe, garden hoe. And that was added leverage. Well, now they have taken that one with a little hook on the end, and it's kind of like they say, close your eyes and if you're drunk, we'll draw that line, and that's sort of this weird line. But there's a logic to that, because what they've done is kind of put a little pivot in the center of the handle. And so you can actually use it for extra leverage with standing on it or where you move it. So that's the idea, is that it has this really unconventional wavy shape that gives it, I guess, extra leverage. Is that the idea?
Yes, I think the ideal this tool is ideal for doing like a kitchen, where you're going to be lifting things up slowly and easily and accurately. You're going to remove some tile. You're going to remove some wall panels. It does everything. And by having a flat section the way it does, you tend not to damage things. And like I say, I've done kitchens with it, and it just does everything I want it to do. I just think it's a great tool, but it's a very silly looking tool.
Right. And it's not that expensive. It's just a pry bar. It's metal. So
$14.
Right. It'll last a lifetime.
Mine is. Yes.
Yes.
And they even make the end of it yellow, so you can't lose it in your toolbox or your job site.
Right.
It's just, and you know which end to use.
You know which end to use. You got it.
Right, right. And it's Stanley, which is kind of a well-known brand. So that's really great. I had never seen one of these. I've seen Wonder Bars, but not this Super Wonder Bar, I guess.
Super Wonder Bar, yes.
Right, right. Alrighty. Bob, tell us about your fourth tool.
My fourth tool is my favorite tool because I don't remember ever not having this tool. In 1952, a guy by the name of Al founded a fishing business called Al's Goldfish Lure Company up in Wilton, Maine. And he produced a number of lures, but he also produced a plastic injection molded little plastic bonnet that fits over the top of a treble hook. You can use it on single hooks as well, fishing hooks. You can also use it on treble hooks. And with a lot of
treble hook. What's a treble hook?
A treble hook is a hook that is on the hook to the bottom of a lure or the back of a lure, and it comes down and branches into three equal sections. It has three curves with three barbs on it. So the odds of a fish getting hooked are much greater. Most lures have three sets or two sets of treble hooks on it. Now, the problem with a treble hook is that it's the ultimate device for snagging your children, your skin, your fishing kit, your just almost anything. Very, very difficult to keep those hooks, and that's why people buy these giant tackle boxes with little compartments to put each one in so it can't touch another one. But the great thing about these is you snap these little bonnets on, and you can literally put a lure in your pocket and walk around and fish. Most people don't take that many lures, except the fact that they have a box filled with two lures. So if you only want to take two things with you, pop these on them, put them in your pocket, put them in your fanny pack or whatever, and you have a safe lure that you can use and then snap them back on when you're finished. The bonnets float, so if you drop them in the water, they don't go anywhere. They're color-coded. There's three different sizes, the large, medium, and small, for pretty much covers the gamut of hook sizes. And the other thing is they are designed so that water drains out the bottom of them. And I think it is about the simplest single part product that I have ever seen. And I have hundreds of them. That's because I have a lot of lures. I fish a lot. And I found out recently that collectors of antique lures also buy them because they don't want their lures to get scratched by the hooks on other lures.
Is there a version that you can put on like single lure rather than the triple lures? Is there like one for double and one for singles?
Yes, you can take the one for, there's only one kind, one design, and it has three legs on it, or three flanges on it for a treble hook. You can just as easily put it on a single hook. And I just don't fish that way, so I'd never seen it used that way. But I just snap them on my lures, and I can put them all in together, and nothing gets scratched, nothing gets caught on anything else. And it's a great product. They're very inexpensive. And the people that make them, up in Maine, if you contact them at sales@owlsgoldfish.com. They will work with you to do pricing for quantity packages. A lot of people have so many lures, they would like to buy large plastic bags of them. And they work with people to do that. But they sell them in all the places like Cabela's and so on, Bass Pro.
So I know, Bob, we only asked you for four tools, but I wanted to take advantage of your industrial design background and ask you if there's a particular tool that you find really useful in doing prototypes and things in your kind of line of business. Was there a tool that nobody kind of knew very much about that you found really indispensable in your business of industrial design?
Right. Yeah. We had a nice shop. We made prototypes of everything, and we made the most, as a lot of design firms do, make these really, really accurately produced and look absolutely real. And the one tool that I think revolutionized the making of models. The first one was foam core, which I think everyone's familiar with, the whiteboard with the foam in between it. Mm-hmm. Foam core models tend to be more preliminary models. You can make them very, very fast using a number 11 X-Acto blade, an X-Acto knife, and glue.
Hot glue or regular glue?
You can use both. I don't like using hot glue unless there's a reason to. You can typically make cleaner models with Elmer's glue or white glue. But I think that the use of foam core revolutionized making models. And then the second thing that happened pretty much in the same time frame was the use of molded foam in blocks that you could machine. They came in all different grain sizes. They came in different colors. You can paint them and so on. And you could make parts that look like machine parts, and you could paint them. You could use them. And it was a very inexpensive and lightweight material to use to make models. They pretty much replaced the use of wood, which was the standard for years and years and years.
Where do you get block foam like that?
It varies. Any art supply store pretty much sells all of these foam materials now. There are specific foams, like getting into the white foams, the high, really high density foams that you can actually machine, and they have a good, you know, a decent surface on them. You can get those from specialty shops that handle foam, but it's not packaging foam. It's a rigid foam that will hold tolerances, and it's just amazing what you can do with it. It's really incredible.
That's a great suggestion. You wanted to tell us about a project that you're working on or a book?
Well, I'm not writing a book. We kind of do books for everything we work on so that they become protocol books. And it's so other people can follow a similar protocol that we have followed. And one of the things I wanted to bring up was that when I first started in industrial design, it was the typical plastic and wood and making models. And when we got into the design of models and what's the process of design, I found that, as a lot of other designers did, that there was not a process that was followed that included all of the inputs that are needed to satisfy a market that's either worldwide, typically worldwide. And so in the very early days, we convinced the company to support the designer's ability to travel worldwide and meet with actual users of the products that you're designing. And it really, for us, revolutionized things, because before we had done all the brochure studies of our competitors. We would buy our competitors' products and look at them, take them apart, and understand what they were doing. But it wasn't until we actually started traveling to individual countries and taking with us models of products that we had developed that in many cases had embedded computers in them. And we could actually demonstrate how the product worked in all three-dimensional aspects of it. And it also operated with a user interface, and people could interface with the product like it was real. And when we started doing that, people started volunteering suggestions. You know, what if you did this? What if you did that? This would make a better product. And when we did that, we would might go on the road for 2 weeks and meet with many, many, many different sites worldwide. And in the evening, we would transmit the data back to the U.S. at our development site of what we had found out those days that might be added back into the design of a new product. And this enabled us to make the product one time and make it right. And instead of doing iteration after iteration to fix things that hadn't been done right the first time.
And one thing I should just say is I highly recommend you check out Bob's Instagram. It's Bob at Harbor is the Instagram account. And Kevin, I think you'd be especially interested because Bob's photographs remind me a lot of the photographs you've been taking on your travels through Asia. They're really beautiful portraits and scenic photos of different countries that Bob has visited, I imagine.
Yeah, I was traveling so much when we were doing the design of a new product. I was going to Europe or Asia probably once a month, and we would meet with people. And finally, as it always happens, you start doing work there, and you have to strike a balance. But our other designers, it became kind of a perk that if you were working on a really solid project and everything was going well, you would always do reviews with it outside the country, and you would come back with many, many ideas of how to do it better. You know, Apple was doing the same thing, and we found that our products were so complex because of the marketplace that they're in. They have mechanical, optical, fluidics, hydraulics, and so on. And it's too much to put together without getting it right. And so we did that, and you could develop a really safe product, a very efficient product. And like I say, it's getting it right the first time when you manufacture it and not coming back and doing version 2 and 3.
Right. And looking at your Instagram, I see that you spent a lot of time in India. And that's always a wonderful test of your ability to travel.
That's one of my favorite countries. We've done 7 countries in Africa and all over Asia. And when we went to India, my wife had been there years ago and did a documentary. And when we went there, I really wasn't that big about going to India. And as it turns out, for photography, I don't know of a better place. Unless you just want to photograph animals in Africa, but it's an incredible place.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. I would love to hear at some time your suggestions about photography tools, but that will have to be another time.
Yeah, let's do it again. Absolutely, Bob. This has been such a pleasure talking to you, finding out about all these great tools, learning about you, the industrial design process. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Really do appreciate it.
Hey everybody, it's Mark from the Cool Tools Podcast. I want to thank you for being a listener to Cool Tools, and I also would like to let you know about our Patreon page. If you would like to support the Cool Tools show, as well as our video channel, the website, and all the newsletters that we do, you can go to patreon.com/cooltools, that's just one word, Cool Tools, and pledge any amount you want. You could even pledge $1 a month. Every little bit helps. We have editors, we pay for transcribing costs, we pay our reviewers. Every bit of money that you contribute goes towards supporting the show. I'd like to give a shout out to our supporters of the Cool Tools Podcast. This week, I'd like to thank the following Patreon supporters: Bill Schuler, Bob Kay, Ryan Pelly, Carl D. Patterson, Chad Cosby, Chris Wieland, Chris Weirstook, Craig Tooker, Dan O'Brien, Dean Putney, Danelle Cunningham, Evan Barker, Graham Medlin, Hans Riesbeck, Helen Hegedus, Jerry Kearns, Jim Lesko, Jim Spofford, John Pollock, John Burdenbaugh, Keith O., Ken Altman, Les Howard, Lauren Bast, Mock Nerd, Malton Make, Mark Goebel, Matt Gromes, Michael Douglas, Michael Jones, and Michael Pecorini. Thanks to all of you for supporting the Cool Tools Show. We really appreciate it.